Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. This is Saturday night. We're not Sunday night anymore, or at least not this week. But we're here on a Saturday night here in the deep. Well, we're not deep in the hot south right now. This is Tim, and I've got on the other end Vince. He's up north where it's nice and cool. Vince, how are you doing?
Oh, hanging in there, Tim. I'm just getting myself kind of set up here, but,
Well, I know you've been going through some challenges lately health-wise. I mean, you know, we're all getting up there with some stuff going on. What can you care to let our listeners know about what's going on? I know you had a big, long Facebook post about it.
Yeah. Well, I began getting kind of tired when I was out working. I just didn't have a lot of stamina, and then I started getting these symptoms from my down near my stomach, and they were pretty gross. Started having trouble swallowing certain things at certain times and whatever, and you know, I was in kind of prayer about it, and I knew I had to go see a doctor, and the word that came to my my head was cancer of the esophagus. So I called my my family physician up immediately and said, I'll be home in 2 days, and you need to check me out. So I went and met with him, and you know, I told him that, you know, what my concern was. And he said, well, you know, that's kind of rare, you know, what you're describing. And I said, yeah, but I says, you know, we need to check it out. Well, they did, and I do have cancer of the esophagus. It's down near the stomach, just above, you know, where the esophagus meets the stomach. So the last few weeks I've been going through a lot of, I've been poked and sedated and scanned and scoped more often than I'd like to even talk about, really. But they believe it's treatable. It hasn't spread outside the local area, so it hasn't metastasized, although it is a large mass. You know, I'm about ready to start the next phase, which is going to be 4.5 to 5.5 weeks of low-dose chemo and radiation. Radiation 5 days a week, the chemo 1 day a week. And like I said, that'll go 4.5 to 5 weeks. And then I'm going to have a two-month break. And then they're going to take the esophagus out with the mass, what's left of it. And they're going to build me a new esophagus out of my stomach. Literally, they kind of squeeze the stomach up, and it becomes,
right,
the upper part of the stomach becomes the esophagus. And that's going to be about a 6 to 8 week process between the surgery and recovery. So, you know, this is going to take a while. And, you know, I have good days and bad days. I'm not going to lie. You know, today's been a little rough. I guess some days when I feel better, it's at times very hard to eat. I've lost a lot of weight, probably about 30 pounds or more. I've lost 6 inches off my waist. I'm actually fitting in the pants that I haven't fit in since, gosh, would have been my probably almost my deprogramming days.
When you meet somebody who's fighting cancer like that, I mean, they look like skin and bones a lot of times.
Well, you know, you burn off, cancer burns off a lot of calories too.
Yeah.
So it's not just what you're able to take in, because I've been eating a fair amount. It's that cancer burns off. And the guy told me, he says, during radiation, he said, you're going to burn off a whole lot more. So, you know, it's probably going to be the biggest battle I've ever fought in my life, and I've fought some pretty big ones.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to the Lord about it, and, you know, I'm not afraid. Sometimes I'm more afraid of the treatment than I am of the disease.
Yeah.
But
that's so true. I mean, so anymore, some of these treatments, you know, if they're giving you a full dose radiation, I mean, I've seen a number of people not come out of that lately.
Well, you know, it's a lot more sophisticated today because with the machines they have, like the reason for the chemo is that the chemo, I'm not getting a heavy dose of chemo. I'm getting much less than what would be a dose that they would give somebody without chemo. The chemo just targets the tumor and kind of highlights it. But this radiation today, these machines are so accurate, and they can be aimed in like 8 or 10 different positions, and they can hit the tumor without affecting too much of the tissue around it.
Okay.
So it's a different ball game than it was even 5 or 10 years ago. You know, it's very, very specific. And so that's the reason why they scanned me and they marked me at in a very specific position in the machine, because that machine is going to, you know, the total treatment is only going to be, the actual treatment time is about 8 minutes, but they're going to hit that tumor eight or nine different ways, 10 different ways. So no one spot's going to get hit for very long. So it's a whole different ballgame than in the past, where they kind of aimed it at the general area and zapped you.
Yeah.
It's very sophisticated today. So, you know, but I wonder sometimes, you know, because like I said, I can really feel the difference. I'm weakening. I mean, I'm physically, demonstratively weakening. And it's affecting a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
you can hear your voice. You're not not the strong self you've been on past shows.
So, yeah. So that's basically it.
Yeah.
We'll do our best
to get through it. Yeah. Hey, yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing about radio. We got a YouTube channel. You got to dress up right, look good. And you listen to Sean Hannity. He talks about the difference between radio and television. He's like, yeah, radio, I can come in wearing blue jeans and a T-shirt, and I'm perfectly happy, but I got to put this stinking suit on for the TV.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is I went and got my hair cut today.
Yeah.
And this young gal that I was sitting with over at the, you know, the hair place, you know, we started talking. I looked in the mirror and I was in shock because my face looked so much more drawn and it was pale.
Yeah.
I was real pale. And I looked like 10 years older. And we got to talking and she started asking me about Wicca and stuff. And, you know, and then I told her why I had a background dealing with the cults and strange religions and stuff like that. So we got into it, and, you know, she began asking me a bunch of questions, and the reality is that I got to witness to her, and she was listening to what was being said, and she agreed with me that, you know, the cults and this and some of these other religions and whatever, you know, we got into the demonic, and, you know, I gave her some examples of experiences I had in dealing directly with the demonic in cases. And, you know, when it was all done, she realized what the issue was with that and how important it was to stay close to Christ, especially in these days. She sees what's going on, especially in these days, and it ended up being a wonderful time. And, you know, the Lord got got profit out of it. So, you know, even when you're not right, God can use, he opens up doors and he can use things.
Right.
And that's, you know, so, you know, we will just do what we can.
That's just it. I mean, if you'll just start a conversation with people, there will be opportunities.
Yeah.
Most of us just don't look for them.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But, I mean, they pop up. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, I was so excited about going back to work at McDonald's, because McDonald's, you're in the world. I'm sorry. I mean, the kids there are looking for answers, and you've got them. The customers, if you get talking with a few of them, they're looking for answers.
Yeah.
The opportunities are there.
Yeah. And,
that's it.
And, you know, you know, a lot of people who are listening don't know my background, but I've been in ministry since 1981. And I have spent years and years of my ministry bringing people out of cults, the occult, Satanism, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done just about, at least a few times, just about everything in that area, and hundreds of people came out. We had a 98% success rate. And then after that time was over, I got in other areas of study, and then I began evangelizing. And in the various ministries I've had and opportunities I've had, probably evangelized 1,500, 2,000 people and discipled most of them.
Uh-huh.
And you need to understand that this is a spiritual thing. This is, you know, a certain amount of this is payback. I truly believe that I really upset the forces of darkness over those years. Now, the question is that where's God going to take it? But I have no question in my mind that this is an attack, because things that we've done, that I've done, and that we've done together, Tim, even with our old show, there were people that heard that show and got saved.
Yeah.
All right? There were people who came out or rethought things and got saved. And see, Satan hates
that. Well, that's the thing about the format that we do here. I mean, 90% of the people who listen to this show are not hearing us live. They're going to pick us up somewhere, and they're going to listen to some, most, maybe all of the show, and they're going to have their own decisions to make, just based on listening to an archived version of the show. They're going to pick it up off of podcasts. They're going to pick it up off of iTunes. They're going to pick it up off of somebody making a CD. I mean, you were telling me about the CDs that are going out the wazoo with the truck drivers when we were doing the old show. But and it really doesn't matter if it was this show on this station or the old show. To me, it doesn't matter. It's all one ministry to me. I mean, the idea is that we get the word out. You know, I don't do this for the people who did the other station. I don't do this even for my own personal gain. I do this for the Lord. I mean, this is his show. This is, if he's going to use it, he's going to use it. If he doesn't want to use it, he doesn't have to. I mean, if this show, you know, we pray every night before we go on that, the words go forth, won't come back void. But if the Lord wants them to come back void, he will. I mean, it doesn't matter. As long as we do our part. We get
That's
the message
right.
out. We let people know that, hey, you know, there's problems out there. I mean, you know, we got health problems. I mean, there's none of us are guaranteed to be here till the rapture.
Right.
None of us. We might. I mean, my pastor for years back in the 80s, it was like, yeah, you don't need life insurance. We'll be here till the rapture. Well, he died of a ripe old age. He was like 80, 85, 89 or something like that. And he died.
Right.
The last 10 years of his life, he was basically senile. The only time he was ever anywhere near coherent was if you ask him a spiritual question. Boy, he came alive. But if you're talking about
right.
day-to-day stuff, I mean, he was like, oh, I don't know, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of weird how this all works out. But, you know, none of us are guaranteed to be here till the rapture. Even though we believe the rapture could happen before the show's over with.
Right.
Yeah, I was just looking at, I was preaching last week out of a verse in Luke. It says, you know, we don't know if it's going to be in the second watch or the third watch. And I know Jacob Prash is like, well, that means it's either going to be the second half of the, second third of the tribulation or the third third half of the tribulation.
Right.
No, that's not what it means. It just means you don't know the day or the hour.
Right.
So.
Right.
But
yeah.
The thing is, you know, I'm looking at the things going on. You know, we kind of slowed down with this, you know, when Trump got elected. But, hey, things are still happening. I mean, look at the Middle East right now.
Yeah.
The Middle
the
East,
forces have all
Israel
lined up.
Especially, is in such turmoil because they cannot put – nobody can put together a government.
Yeah,
Netanyahu is still kind of acting prime minister, but he hasn't been able to put together a government. He really can't do anything. They're going to do another election here and see if they can get one with so somebody can get a coalition. But there's no guarantees. I mean, he's having to bend over backwards just to get some of the more conservative parties on his side. While the liberal parties are forcing them to, I'm just looking at an article in the Jerusalem Post saying that Netanyahu's having trouble keeping up with his legal bills just because of all the corruption that they're going through. The corruption scandals that he's facing, and you think that Trump has faced some ones. I mean, he's faced nothing compared to what Netanyahu has faced.
Right.
So.
Yeah, well, it's a new world order really trying to get rid of the opposition. Because now everything in the Middle East is set up for Ezekiel, you know, 38 and 39.
I mean,
it's there. Yeah, you got Turkey now siding with Iran and just think about it. A few years ago, they were actually allies with Israel. They were doing joint military maneuvers and stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody said, well, no, it's not possible because Turkey's part of NATO and it's you know, they're allies with Israel and so forth. Well, that changed almost overnight. And that's why I keep telling people things will happen very quickly, and old alliances will break up and new alliances will form. And, you know, now you look at the tension there with Iran, and you also see some of the things that are happening in Israel. For one thing, if Netanyahu doesn't, you know, get his government together and whatever, Israel is going to be in a weakened position. And, you know, we've got our ships in the Persian Gulf area. And, you know, our government may refuse to fund Trump to take an action if he has to. So we may be out of that picture strictly because of our own politics here if things start getting nasty. So it very much may be a miraculous work of God to deliver Israel when that attack comes because they, you know, the forces are there. The forces of Antichrist are there. They are coalescing, and we're seeing it here in this country. you know, big time.
Said,
and there is
there's
a real divide. There is a big
there's
gulf.
There's a real divide. Well, here in the United States, it's getting to the point where the opposition is getting stupid. And and what amazes me is that they are still have a loyal following. You looked at the debate the Democrats had the other night. I mean, which one of those even halfway captured the imagination of the American public?
Right.
None of them. It was who can give away the most of the farm?
Yeah. Here's what you have. You have some of the older folks our age, all right, who are trying to buy into this progressive thing, frankly, out of laziness. They want the goodies. All right, but the young, now I say that because much of my generation went through the Cold War. All
right,
we know what went on. All right, we should know better. But you also need to understand that the young people, they have no basis for discerning anything. They know nothing about history. They know nothing about even what's happened in the last 40 or 50 years or 60 years. You know, they have no spiritual knowledge. You're dealing with kids who couldn't tell you who Noah was. A lot of these young guys today, they don't know who Noah. They don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
They have no reference point of truth. All right? They have no means of discerning. You have to have reference points to discern. It was a lot easier for me back in the 70s, you know, early 80s, especially mid-80s, to bring people out of cults because most of them had some knowledge of the faith. So that when somebody, they got involved in a cult, and it didn't matter what kind of cult, all the cults brought a Jesus into the picture. All right? But they considered the Bible to be a source of truth. And, you know, we could agree on that. We could agree that there's a reality that is testable. Today, it doesn't matter whether it's testable, it's how you feel.
Oh, yeah.
If you feel it, it's true.
Well, these kids don't even have a...
There's no basis.
Let's talk about why that happened. In your generation, how did school start out?
When I was young, we started out with prayer and we said the Pledge of Allegiance. There was a prayer. The Ten Commandments were in our classroom, and there was usually a small Bible reading, older New Testament.
Well, when I was
all
in
right,
school,
they kind of switched back.
Yeah, when I was in school, 10 years later, you know, it started off with, I walk in, after we put our books down, we said the Pledge of Allegiance, and then we started our day.
Right.
Where'd the prayer go?
Well, by the time you were there,
somebody took
prayer
it
was
out.
Gone.
Prayer was gone when I started school. That happened like 5 years before I started.
Right.
All right. Now, I'm 55. What age are most of the teachers retiring? About 50 to 60.
Most of them retire between 50 and 65,
Okay.
65.
So the generation that is retiring never had prayer in school.
Right.
So we got a bunch of teachers out there who are being taught by a bunch of teachers who never had prayer. Now they want to get rid of the pledge. I think it's gone in a lot of places. So we have no loyalty to God. We have no loyalty to the country. We're just teaching whatever we floats our boat right now.
It's more than that, Tim, because it wasn't just eliminating prayer from school. Because, you know, the prayer in school... You know, we had the Ten Commandments there. Now, that stared you in the face all the time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that. It's that we were raised in the church, and we were taught, at the very least, stories in the Bible and how God did things. All right? There was some basis there that we were taught. There's still a Judeo-Christian worldview for the most part among people. And today you have a generation that has never set foot in the church. You know, for them,
yeah.
Christmas primarily is a gift season. You know, it's a time to party. And they don't have the faintest idea.
Yeah, even
right?
Weddings.
Well, I mean, I was taught from
the
youngest,
prettiest spot in the town, yeah.
Yeah, I was taught from the time I was a young kid about Christ's return. All right? Now, I drove a bus, took a group down to Williamsburg, Virginia. We went through the church cemetery. And they explained to the kids that most, you know, a lot of women died young in childbirth, and they were buried there with their children. And that if a woman managed to get past the childbirth thing, and if she didn't come down with something else, she might live a fairly long life. But that most men had two or three wives in their lifetime because their wives passed away.
Right.
All right. And so we're going through the cemetery, and these kids were reading the gravestones, and there were mothers that were buried with their kids, and there would be scripture verses on there. You know, here lies Elizabeth and her daughter waiting for the resting until the last trump. All right? And these kids had no idea. They were asking me, they're going, you know, Mr. T, what's this mean? What's this mean? And they had no idea. And I said, well, the last trump is in Thessalonians, talks about when Christ is going to return. When Christ returns and the dead are raised in Christ, that's called the last trump.
Yeah.
When they stand before the judgment seat. And I said, that's what that's talking about. Oh, really? Gosh, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that there was a return of Christ. A return. I don't even know anything about Jesus. Now, this was back, what, in the mid to late 90s?
Okay.
All right, that's one generation. My kids were in that age group back then. All right? Some of my kids were the same age as these kids that were on that bus. And so I'm just telling you that now we've got another generation since then.
Mm-hmm.
And you just need to understand that our society has lost its moorings. And you have right now a battle between two sides. You have what's left of the traditional, I call it the traditional Judeo-Christian moral worldview, and you have what's called the progressive worldview. All right? And the two are oil and water. All right? And they cannot mix. If you try to mix it one with the other, you destroy the one or the other. And more likely, the conservative moral worldview is going to suffer. All right?
Yeah.
The most. And that's what you're dealing with today. There is no way. They're blaming Trump and saying that he caused disunity. Trump didn't do it.
He's just showing it. Yeah.
This has been, he's just brought it out. There is no unity, and there can be no unity between us and the Gang of Four. All right? There can be no unity between us and the progressive Democrats. We cannot have unity. We have a God that is the God of life. He is the creator of life, and he is the God of life. We can have no communion with those that so cheaply want to end it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, we come from a God that teaches us that progression comes along through real sacrifice, laying down one's life. All right, that's the whole idea of our vocations, is that we're going to lay down our life. Our vocation, voca, means to call. All right, we have a calling, and our whole job is to lay down our life and produce something for that will bless others. All right, and then you got another side that doesn't believe that. They believe life is the government's going to give it to you and take what you can get. Now, there's no way you're going to reconcile those two concepts because they're antithetical to each other.
Right.
So putting Democrats in there is not going to create a unity. All right? What it might create is a civil war. I mean, we're really right on the brink of civil war here.
Yeah.
You know, this continues on, all these accusations and obstructions and, you know, whatever. Sooner or later, it's going to hit a critical mass. And we are really on the brink of civil war. And whether I live another 4 or 5 years may be irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
We may not have.
But we have kids who will be living those 4 or 5 years. And
exactly.
It's going to be, you know, they're going to pay the price. You know, we're going to be sitting back watching the action. We might get caught in the crossfire or something, but, you know, they're going to be in the action.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, when it starts coming apart.
I have had liberal friends threaten me with possible, you know, I could get shot in a civil war.
Right.
I'm like, no, not really. I'm a pacifist. You're going to have to find me to shoot me. That's murder. But still.
Yeah,
you know, I'm going to be a non-combatant. You know, I'm too old to fight anyway. But
right.
You know, if we have to, we have to.
Yeah.
But let's get down to the nitty gritty here. I mean, what I asked you to do some research on and come back to me, let's talk about this concept of spiritual formation, because I'm starting to see this through the church a lot.
Right.
You know, the beauty of it is, you know, we're supposed to be developing the inner man. Okay, that's what it's advertised as. You know,
right.
Develop the inner man. We're supposed to be, which I think we're all in favor of that. We're supposed to spend time in prayer. We're supposed to spend time in Bible study. We're supposed to develop the inner man so that we're more spiritually conscious of what God is doing through us in the world.
Right.
But yeah, in the formal, you know, in what's going on with, you know, with that, you know, we're seeing some kind of interesting, weird stuff going on with this whole concept. It's not just, not just developing a better relationship with God. I mean, we're starting to hear people talk about, I'm now a prophet and things like this. So, you know, what's going on? Tell me, what are you seeing out there with this spiritual formation thing?
Well, you know, it's a lot of this is tied into the New Apostolic Reformation movement, which was brought on by John Wagner, who was a professor at Fuller Theological Seminary. Now, this has been moving in this direction for a long time. A lot of it has kind of hijacked the charismatic and Pentecostal movements. And what it really says is that what they're really teaching is that there's, you know, what was in the Bible was kind of the old way. But in these end times, there's going to be a new way. And they're heavily reviving the prophet. There's a little bit of shepherding in there. You remember what shepherding was, where you know, you'd have to go before your elders before you made any decisions on anything. Yeah, you know, you kind of tied yourself to an elder or a prophet.
Right.
And you needed his permission basically, or his okay to do just about anything. It got to the point where, to being ridiculous in some of these groups, where it's very much like the Moonies or other groups, you didn't even go out and buy a hamburger without talking to the prophet.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what's happening now is that they're eschatologically changing the scripture and the doctrines. They're saying that, you know, we can do this, we can cause this inner spiritual transformation, and then we'll send these people out, and they will go into these countries, and they will create these spiritual transformations, and then we will literally take over these countries, and we'll set up the kingdom. You know, we'll get the kingdom all set up and ready, and then when Jesus comes, he's just going to come down and give us all a pat on the back and give us an attaboy, because we did such good work for him, you know, in doing this.
Look at this one website here. It says, we are following Jesus into a God-saturated world.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that goes totally against the teachings of Jesus and the teachings of from the beginning. All right? We go into the world to make disciples. If we make enough disciples, that could have a change on societies, and it has a positive change. But the world, as the Bible talks about it, all right, is the world of disobedience, the world of rebellion. All right, we're supposed to be the lights in that world. We're to go out and search for Christ's sheep, bring them into the fold, disciple them, all right, teach them the word, teach them how to have that relationship and intimacy with Christ, and how to emulate Christ through that, all right? But nowhere is to say that we Christians are going to saturate the world and conform the world to Christ. No, Jesus said quite the opposite in Matthew 24 and passages in Luke about what was coming in the end times. And he said it was going to get worse and worse, and that the hearts of men were going to become colder and colder and more rebellious, and that it was going to get so bad that there was never a time in history that it would be so bad as what was coming. And he said, when you start seeing those things, you look up, for your redemption draws nigh. The whole thing was actually the opposite of what these groups are teaching. All right, and so what we're seeing here is a false eschatology, a false gospel being presented, and a false Jesus. For when Christ comes on the earth, it's going to be to avert, literally to avert, the annihilation of mankind at Armageddon. When he comes in and intervenes, for one thing, at least two-thirds of the planet are going to be dead. And there will be a few remnant that are spared when he sets up his millennial kingdom. But he is the one that's going to keep man from utterly obliterating himself. And that's, you know, we see that in Revelation very clearly. All right, it's not the church here on earth that is going to be fighting that battle. It's going to be the church with the Lord and the saints and the angels from heaven. All right, the state of the world at that point is going to be just utter chaos and confusion. You know, it says in the Battle of Armageddon that the blood is going to go up to the necks of the horses. 200 million men. It's going to be a slaughter. Yeah. Like, if God, in essence, if Christ didn't intervene, there would be no one left. That's really what it comes down to. So our job is not to create not to try to conform the world to all the world to what we believe. Our job is to find the sheep that are Christ, who have been called by Christ, who have already been called by Christ. We're to find them, present the gospel to them, make them disciples of Christ, teach them to be disciples of Christ, so that they'll be able to stand. It's this idea that if two-thirds of the world goes into perdition, somehow God lost. All right, God never loses. It has nothing to do with numbers. You know, when we read Daniel 7, it talks about the myriads and myriads of people from every nation, tongue, and tribe. And then we see that also demonstrated in Revelation, the Son of Man in Daniel going before the Ancient of Days. And then we see this also in Revelation. All right, but those were the called. And even though it's going to be a tremendous amount of people, maybe a billion, 2 billion, who knows? All right, the fact is that much of the world is going to go into damnation. It's not a numbers thing. God wins because he has a plan, and his plan will be completed, and he will be glorified. Even by the condemned, he will be glorified.
Mm-hmm.
That every knee will bow. Every mouth proclaim that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Every knee, without exception, the damned will be praising him all the way to hell. All the way to the lake of fire, they'll be praising him. All right? God will be glorified in this. And he will have his people. And those people will be with him for eternity. And that is our reward. And he will elevate us. The new man that will be resurrected is going to have a body like Christ. We are not going to have a body like Adam. We're going to have a spiritual body like Christ. Adam was limited to the earth. He had to eat. He needed certain things. All right? But the spiritual body of Christ is able to transcend dimensions. All right? It is able to look at what Christ did. Look what the heavenly hosts do. They can go right through a door, right through a wall. Yet they're perfectly solid. They're able to do things that we are going. So we're going to be changed. The end result of this plan puts man in a much higher position than he had. Would have had Adam never sinned. Because the second Adam is superior to the first Adam. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So God is going to elevate. We're not going to elevate ourselves. We're not New Agers. We don't elevate ourselves. God will elevate us. That will be part of the transformation when you know, we are joined back together again. And we will have this body, and we will be a lot like, we will be like Christ. We will not share every attribute of Christ, because Christ is eternal. All right? But in most attributes, we will be like Christ. And that's why we will be able to rule and reign with him. There will be an incredible unity. Our relationship to the bridegroom will be like the relationship of the Father to the Son, and the Holy Spirit to the Father and the Son. It will be one of unity. Thus, we will be able to rule and reign with him, because whatever judgments we make will be the same judgment that the Father or the Son would have made, because we will have that intimate relationship through Christ, through that new body with Christ. You see, and that's the crux of the gospel. Because I hear a lot of guys saying, oh, it's going to be like it was in the Garden of Eden. You know, man will be restored back to what he was in Eden. Well, that's not what I'm reading in Paul's writings. No, Paul said the first Adam was, you know, he was of the earth. He was of dust. But the second Adam is a life-giving spirit. It's a spiritual body. That doesn't mean, you know, we're like the wind and we just blow around. No, this spiritual body has substance. It is physical.
Well, Jesus, but it is of a far higher nature.
Right. Yeah, but you know what? He never said, you know, touch me, am I not flesh and blood? He said, touch me, am I not flesh and bone?
Right.
His life did not spring from blood. The blood is what corrupts us, what dies. He had life into himself. There was a life that he had that emanated directly from God that was not dependent on blood.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you know, I mean, we a lot of people, you know, we miss this stuff in our studies. No, we are going to be raised to a higher place, and it's not a function of numbers. It's not a function of numbers at all. It's that God will get exactly what he wants. His plan will be fulfilled exactly to the letter as he said it would be fulfilled. And what is going to be glorious is us watching him do it, not us doing it.
Right.
All right, we're going to watch him do it. We're going to see the wonders and all these things happen. When Christ comes for to ransom his bride, because that's what he's going to be doing. He's ransoming us back. All right, we're not preparing, you know, making the world, you know, so he just kind of comes in, you know, kind of sits down in the seat and goes, oh, you guys are just so great. Man, I couldn't have done this better. It's not the way it works.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'm getting at with the spiritual formation, what it looks to me like is spiritual formation is man trying to find God. In reality,
exactly.
God finds us.
Right. Exactly. It started with God. God is active throughout the whole process, and it ends with God. That's what he meant when he said, I am Alpha and Omega. He's saying, you know, it starts with him. Everything happens along the road because of him, and then it ends with him. And we're along, you know, basically, we're privileged. He allows us to be participants of watching what he does. That's, you know, really what it comes down to. He allows
right.
us the privilege to participate. He doesn't need us to do it. He privileges us with it, of experiencing that life of his, even on this planet. So we go out, we pray, and we preach, and people come to the Lord. But if there isn't a preacher there, as we're seeing in the Middle East and Africa, the Lord will appear to them. If we aren't able to do our job or don't do our job, what did Jesus say? He said the very rocks and stones will start to sing.
Yep.
He'll do it. You know, the most important thing that a Christian needs to understand, especially an American Christian, because I think they understand this in the Africa and the Middle East and places where, and the East, where people are getting saved right now. That's where the revival is. All right? They understand this. But we don't. We have this, you pull yourself up constantly by your own bootstraps. No, you don't. He pulls you up by your bootstraps. And if you go out there and you don't have the Spirit of God leading you or directing you, you can talk to somebody till you're blue in the face and you'll never, ever never get them saved. Now, they will never come to the Lord. It's got to be an act of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We are just there. We are the message givers. He allows us to participate in that way. You know, we share our experiences with the young believer. But it is God that brings the maturity. It is God that lights the fire under them. All right? You know, we can't force that. We can try it in our worship or whatever, but it usually ends up being a dud. When God does something, it lasts. It transcends programs and fads and times. All right, a lot of what we're doing in the church today is wood, hay, and stubble.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. You know? But
well,
if
you
we're
know, you look,
truly
you
making
look
disciples,
at some of these churches. Yeah, look at their various ministries. Which ones are the most effective ones? It's the one where God told somebody to go do something and the church endorsed it. Not necessarily
right.
where the pastoral staff got together and says, we need a ministry for this, and I want you to lead.
Right. Hey, that's how it started with me.
Yeah.
When I came out of the way, I started getting calls. I went out and did it. The church for a while sat back.
Yeah.
Oh, they were encouraging. I mean, they didn't tell me don't do it or whatever. But they wouldn't put their imprimatur on it. They didn't put the imprimatur on it until I was doing it for about a year. And then they say it's obvious that we need to recognize your calling.
Right. Well, you know, at my church, I started doing this show. I mean, this. But eventually the church says, okay, business meeting's coming up. You've got this ministry. Come give us a report.
Yeah.
And now I regularly give a report on what's going on with this ministry.
Right.
To the church. So it has become part of the church.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a point where the church will see it and will accept it.
Yeah.
You know, and it will bear a lot of fruit. If it's of the Lord, it will bear a lot of fruit.
Correct.
You know, there were very few cases I went on where I came back with a goose egg. All right? Like I told people, 98, 99% successful. Everybody else that was doing that work was lucky. They were hovering around 40 to 50%. What was the difference? Well, the difference was the calling, the devotion to it, the study, the ability to merge, you know, the what was happening to the person's thought processes with the spiritual. You know, what the cult was doing to manipulate the person's mind. I call it indirect possession because Satan uses people to possess rather than him himself because that's too obvious. All right? So, you know, it was that kind of thing. And, you know, I didn't go out on a case unless I had prayer teams, man. When we left for that case, we were prayered up. And if I didn't have butterflies and if I didn't get certain signs, I knew I better stay away from that case. If I wasn't starting battle before I even left the house or the week or two before that case started, if I wasn't already in battle, spiritual battle over that, I wasn't supposed to do it.
Yeah.
It was brutal. It was a tough ministry, man. I mean, it was physically and mentally brutal on me. I'm not going to kid you. That's why at a certain point I asked the Lord to let me out of it because I was exhausted. I mean, it took me a couple years just to recover from that work I did.
Right.
Those years. All right. So, you know, that's where it's at. But if it's of the Lord, it will bear fruit, and it will bear fruit long term. You don't know, occasionally I get calls from people that I haven't talked to in 25 years. And then when they tell me what's happened in their life and what the Lord has done, I'm amazed, because they far outdid the teacher. All right? They went far, in some cases, far further than I ever did.
Yeah.
All right? That's the evidence, is the fruit that comes out of that.
Yeah. But sometimes the teacher is only so good much. The Lord's got to do the rest.
Yeah.
All right,
but
Vince,
somebody.
Well,
yeah. All right.
Well, it's great to have you back now. I don't know about, you know, how many shows we'll do here on. It depends on how your treatment's coming. But we need to hit some things and hit them hard, because we've got a fall coming up.
Yeah.
And things are going to
yep.
be happening. So hopefully we'll
get
back on Sunday night. I'm doing mostly Sunday morning at work now. I'm happen to do Sunday night tomorrow. But we're going to hit this thing hard. And let's just pray that we get some benefit from this, and that we can rescue somebody. But let's...
Okay.
Yeah. We'll see you guys next time, here, there, or in the air.
Simplicity of